Hello and welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by Mr. Dan Provost of Thoroughly Considered and Mr. Jason Snell of Upgrade. I thought we could do a check-in. The iPhone 11 and 11 Pro, Apple Watch Series 5, it's been about a month since they've landed, and I thought it'd be a good time to check in and see how we're feeling about all these new devices.
Sounds like a plan.
Let's do it.
So Dan, let's start with you. What did you end up upgrading this year, and where were you coming from? Like, give us a lay of the land in the Provost household.
Sure, sounds good. So I upgraded to an 11 Pro from the iPhone 10. So I had skipped the previous generation, so it was a 2-year upgrade. And then the Apple Watch, I had the Series 4, and going into the event, I was like, there's no way I'm going to upgrade a year over year. My previous Apple Watch was the Series 0, so I was expecting kind of a 3 or 4 year life of the Series 4 that I had. And then the always on display was announced, and I held off for a little while. So admittedly, I've only had my Apple Watch for 2 weeks instead of the full month because I tried to hold strong and not upgrade. But I was like, man, I think I really want that always on display. And that's, for me, that's turned out to be the right move. Like, it, to me, it's such a game changer, and it improves the Apple Watch in such a significant way that I don't think can be understated, that I'm really happy I upgraded.
I had a very similar experience with the watch. I don't wear it every day. I had a Series 4, and I thought, I'll be fine. And I too have caved. Jason, you're a little bit different because you get to review this stuff. So what have you ended up as your personal devices this time around?
This was buying cycle month for me. This was expensive bill month for me. So I do have review units of the phones, although not the watch this year. My watch review unit history is real spotty. It goes, I don't know, sometimes I'm there and sometimes I'm not. But I bought myself the new watch because I really, 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 really use my Apple Watch a lot and wanted the always on display. And I bought myself the iPhone 11 Pro because it was sort of that part of the cycle. I didn't buy myself a XS, so I bought myself an 11 Pro. And then I also bought my daughter. Jamie went off to college. She's a freshman at the University of Oregon, and she's been using hand-me-down phones for her entire life up to now. And she took a brand new purple iPhone 11 with her to school. It came the week before she went to college because they started really late. So I was able to get it for her before she went. And that also made my son happy because he got her hand-me-down because he had an iPhone 6 whose battery was dying. So everybody's happy there. So it's a real, we got a lot of new hardware in the house right now. But I've been really happy, honestly. I think this has been a great set of upgrades, and because I use my Apple Watch, I wear it all the time, the always on, like, it's a little thing, but it's actually a big thing, like, if that makes any sense. Like, it's a, you would think of it as, even living with it, it's kind of like, well, you know, it's just on all the time, but I am slowly training myself out of the all of those, like, muscle memory things of jerking my wrist in order to force the thing to be awake, and that's good. That's much better.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to make a statement that isn't too hyperbolic, but I think it is going to end up sounding that way. I feel like the always-on display is the biggest year-over-year change, certainly in the Apple Watch, and maybe just for any Apple product. That's probably too extreme, but I feel like it really, it eliminates what was by far the biggest caveat of the Apple Watch, which is like, yeah, it's got all this great functionality. It has these features that you might want, but like, it turns off all the time and you have just like a blank screen. And I feel it's like, now it's a watch, like, as silly as that sounds. And so I feel like it just makes the experience of wearing it every day so much better. You kind of didn't realize when you had it before because it was totally fine. But now that it does have the always on, it just feels like, how did I ever live with the screen turning off all the time? So I don't know. For me, it feels like a huge upgrade.
Yeah, I agree. Marco on ATP talked about like how the cellular thing was not as big as this. And I think he's right because not everybody uses the cellular feature. I do feel that those are the two like things that we knew day one when they announced, 5 years ago when they announced the Apple Watch. These were the two features that we were all like, well, certainly they must do that eventually, right? It's got to have cellular networking and it's got to be on all the time. And, you know, this is the last big checkbox for the Apple Watch. There's plenty more to do, but like, I agree. It's a huge thing because now it is just, it's a watch. It's not a, you know, black slab that you shake your wrist and now it's a watch temporarily. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it totally changes like the fundamental nature of the product that it's just available to you all the time.
Yeah, and I think it makes it feel just much nicer to use even when the always on display is not actually providing functionality. So a good example is for example, I use the reminders app as a grocery list when I'm in the grocery store. And so apps, when they're in the kind of dim mode, they blur out. And so when I need to look at my list, I still have to do that gesture and still have to wait a second to be able to see the list. But the experience of a screen unblurring versus a screen being black and then turning on just feels so much nicer, even though I'm not actually speeding up the time to which I'm able to see my list and interact with it. It just feels a lot better. So just like the overall user experience, I feel is really improved by the always on display.
I know there's been a lot of talk about battery life on the Series 5. How has that been for the two of you?
For me, it's been a total non-issue. I knew we would potentially be talking about that, so I've kept closer tabs on that. And the past couple days, I've had the watch on basically for 14 hours with a 30-minute workout thrown in there and ended the day with around 50% battery. So I don't even think about the battery. It's totally fine.
Likewise, I feel for the people who had these battery issues, but I have not. And I have a larger watch, so I have the larger battery, but like it has never come close to even needing to be put in the low power mode. It like, and this is with the screen on and with, yeah, at least a workout a day, just hasn't been an issue for me. You know, the one thing, and I think maybe it's related, I'm not sure, to speaking of sort of like charging and all of those things, the one thing I've noticed in the new version of watchOS, I think, although it might be in the hardware, that bugs me actually, is I used to be able to very slightly jostle my nightstand at night because I use my watch as my clock and my alarm clock. I used to very slightly nudge the nightstand and the screen would turn on and show me the time. And strangely enough, on this, either on the OS or on the hardware, I have to tap it really hard, or I need to actually reach out and bump the watch to get that thing to light up. It's like and maybe people complained that they were very slightly moving and the watch was lighting up, but like I really got to rely on that. And ironically now, so that's a case where I want the screen on in this always on watch, but it's not always on when it's charging, and it doesn't let me, which is too bad. I would actually love a mode where it was on dimly all night while it was charging, but that's not something that they want to do. So that's a weird thing, but no battery problems.
Yeah, that's a good, I was actually curious if when I was getting the watch, if they were going to allow you to have the face on throughout the night. I was a little surprised that wasn't an option, but I wouldn't be surprised if they add that in a software update later on.
It'd be great. That nightstand mode. Is that what they call it?
Nightstand. Yeah.
It's really solid. I have noticed that too. And I hadn't put it into words until you said that, but a couple of nights ago, I woke up and same kind of deal. I would just kind of like touch my nightstand and it would light up. And I felt like I had to like body slam the thing. I was like, what is going on?
Right.
And I'd actually kind of even forgotten about that until you said, I was like, oh yeah, I've noticed that too. And maybe it was too sensitive, or maybe they're doing, who knows how that goes. Now, Jason, I know that you are a aluminum Apple Watch kind of guy. Have you stayed in that lane with the dark aluminum?
I have. I thought really hard about getting a different you know, looking at the titanium or something like that. But a combination, honestly, if titanium watches were available everywhere, you turn on a water tap and titanium watches flow out of it or something like that, I might have done it, because I was sorely tempted to try some of one of the new materials. But the fact is, my temptation was going to require a weight, and I needed to get a watch so that I could write about it. Mm-hmm. And so I just went back to my standby, which is the black aluminum watch that I've had in every single model since the beginning. And you know, back in my mind, I'm also saying, yeah, and you're saving several hundred dollars on a watch that you're going to want to replace in a year or two. So I just stayed with boring aluminum. I did get though, Stephen, here, this will be exciting though. I did splurge. I bought the leather loop, the leather magnetic band, which I haven't bought a leather band from Apple since the very first leather band in the first generation. And I've been using that a lot. And it's nice. It's not quite, it's an interesting thing that I think you can get away with it being dressy, but you can also get away with it not being dressy, which is not a bad thing. And I, you know, it's a nicer band that I can wear when I probably shouldn't be wearing a bright orange sport band somewhere.
I've never really ventured out past the sport band. I had one of the original, the classic buckle on the original watch. They got rid of that pretty quickly. But other than that, I've always just used the...
That's what I have.
Otherwise, I've just always used the sports bands.
Somebody chastised me because that leather band comes with a stainless set of lugs, and it doesn't match the color or material.
I can't handle that.
I know you're the one who shamed me about it. But that's the nice thing about the leather loop is the lugs are the color of the band.
Right.
They're not matched to the watch, and I also have a black watch, so it's a perfect match. So other than there's a little, the loop metal, I think, is stainless, but you basically don't see it. So it's all good.
Yeah. So for this was painful for me this year. So I was coming from a silver aluminum series 4, which I really liked, with one minor exception, is how easily the screen got scratched. I don't know if it was just me or this is kind of everyone's experience with the non-sapphire screens, but it got really scratched really fast, and it bothered me more than I thought it would. And so I kind of went down this like decision tree where it's like, oh, okay, I need to do a sapphire one, so that's putting me in like this tier. So I ended up just convincing myself to go with the titanium this year. So nice. That's what I did. Even though I don't use the cellular and have no plans to pay the $10 a month. So it's like really painful to, if you want a sapphire screen, you have to like really jump up in price for me, for features that I don't even need. So to that end, I kind of wish they offered the sapphire screen like all the way down. I understand why they don't, but if they did offer sapphire with aluminum, I would just get that, no problem. But yeah, I'm really, it's really nice. It's really handsome. I didn't think I was thinking of just getting the regular stainless steel, but I do kind of like this, the kind of brushed look is pretty nice. So I've been happy with it so far.
Steven, how's the titanium?
It's great. I've got the titanium as well. Listeners of Connected will know that I bypassed Jason's having to wait by having a friend in New York pick up the watch for me and then ship it to me because I'm a child.
I think that may be true. I could have maybe like gone into San Francisco and gotten one, but I thought, it was one of those things where it's like it needed to be super easy for me to do it. But I'm definitely envious. I want to see them. I'm not precluding like the possibility that I might end up buying a nice Apple Watch sometime. This was just a big wedding anniversary, and my wife got a new ring, which she really wanted and which was really nice. And she was like, "You should get something nice too." And I said, "But you've been married to me for 25 years. I don't do that. I don't buy nice things." And so that was part of my rationale for thinking about a nicer watch and all that. And it might happen someday. In the meantime, I'm just going to cling to my little leather band.
It's the finish is really nice. So I have worn both stainless steel and the dark aluminum watches over the years. I've had both. And the titanium splits the difference in weight. The steel one is really heavy, and it makes the taptics not quite as prominent because it's got, I guess, more mass to make vibrate. But I've really been happy with the titanium. It It looks sort of like, if you haven't seen one, you can picture a, like a DeLorean from Back to the Future, how it diffuses light. Like, it looks shiny, but not shiny. That's what this watch looks like, even though the DeLoreans are made out of stainless steel. Like, it is confusing, but that's what it looks like. So it's reflective, but not shiny. It weighs in between the aluminum and the steel. I've been really, really happy with it so far. And Dan, you're right. My aluminum watches, I've always scratched the screens on. And the Sci-Fi is harder. So in a fall, it's going to be more prone to shatter than the regular Ion glass. But I think you're way more likely to get a scratch on it than shattered anyways, unless you're just, you know, have some sort of accident. So I'm happy with the Sapphire screen. I think it's really nice. I think it feels better. Like, just the texture or something about it feels more premium. And then not having a, you know, deep scratch on it early on, it makes me feel good too.
And plus you get an extra sport band with your purchase.
Yeah.
Inside.
With the regular titanium one, it's like a gray sport band. With the matching pin. That's the one that I'm wearing right now, actually. I didn't like the color when I first got it, and I put it on a white sport band, which I really like, but I've been trying the gray one because the white sport band shows dirt really easily. Like, if you just walk outside, your white sport band will be dirty. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the iPhone. Dan, you and I think, I guess all three of us have the regular iPhone 11 Pro. None of us are in the Max Club this year. I tried the 10S Max last year and it was too big, and I ended up going back to the regular size. I think that 10S 11 Pro size is perfect for a lot of people. I know I really like it. The big feature this year are the cameras, and there have been lots of reviews, and Deep Fusion, as we record this, is still in beta. So, you know, I have no experience with that.
It's not cold enough for sweaters yet.
Yeah. Well, that's right. It's not sweater weather.
Just going to wait it out.
It's very rarely sweater weather here in Tennessee. But what I have been struck with this camera is that this is just a really fun iPhone to make things with. Like, I guess because you have more tools, to more lenses, more things it can do. I've just been really enjoying taking pictures with it.
Same. It's great. Like, this is the truth of it. I keep writing articles that try to get around this same point, which is big picture culturally, the existence of smartphones has changed us as people, as how we interact with the world, because now everybody has a camera with them, and we are documenting our lives in ways that we never did before, and there are expectations about it. And so, like, having a better camera, having better tools, having simple tools, like a lot of Apple stuff, like Deep Fusion, you don't even know it's happening. You know, and it allows Apple to say, suffice it to say, we're using our computer geniuses to make your photos look better. Mm-hmm. And like that works. That works for me, because it really does make things better. I had my first example of one of their outside the frame automatic detect things. I was at a football game and I took a picture of the field, and it wasn't somebody I actually wanted in the frame, but there was like a fan who was off right on the edge of the frame, and it did the thing where it captured that with a wide lens and then added it in and basically said, like, hey, I got that person that you cut off from the picture. And I was like, you know, that I didn't actually want that, and I can crop them out and that's fine. But like, yes, that is ultimately, that's what it's about, is get the good shot, whether you're a professional photographer, whether you're using something like a Glyph product placement to put it on a tripod, which I did. I used a Glyph and did some night shots with the new long duration exposure night mode using a Studio Neat Glyph. And that was amazing too. So yeah, I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, what are these things? They are tethered to the world, and they're our camera that we document our entire lives with. Like, that is feature 1A of what this thing is. So it's been great. Like, more lenses, more cameras, more intelligence, all of it is, it's all really great.
Yeah, I've been surprised by how much fun I'm having with the new ultra-wide lens. I've never owned a lens that has been this wide on all my quote-unquote regular cameras, either the Micro Four Thirds I had or now a full frame. I never thought I needed or desired a lens that wide. I think it's like a 13 millimeter equivalent. And just shooting with it is so much fun. And it's kind of the first lens on an iPhone that introduces, I guess, distortion in a way that you can kind of have fun with and do, like, you can get these weird kind of foreshortening and perspective things that you couldn't really get with the longer lenses. So it's just really fun to shoot with, and I'm finding when I'm shooting video and things, I'm electing to use it, even though as kind of like the nerd and getting into the details, you know that it's like, okay, this like sensor isn't quite as good as the other lenses, or there's like, I think it has kind of like a softer focus. People have kind of dove into the details of the specs of these lenses, but I just don't care because it's really cool and it's fun and it's fun to play around with. So I think it's been an awesome addition to the kind of camera system, and I'm really enjoying having it there.
It's interesting to me that the phone will make certain decisions for you. Like if you are in the 2x zoom, but you want night mode, it's going to use the regular, that middle lens, the regular wide angle, because that's the one that's best suited for night mode. And it's kind of done invisibly. There's times where if you're zooming in, the UI may say you're on the zoom lens, but you're not if they think you're better off on the regular lens. And then, of course, the outside the frame stuff is really interesting too. Deep Fusion is not out yet, but Deep Fusion and outside the frame can't coexist because the way it collects the data. And I find Deep Fusion just so fascinating because there's no UI for it. You can't tell the phone. It's not a mode, right? It's just, if you're in the right circumstance, Deep Fusion will happen to you and you can't do anything about it unless you have outside the frame turned on, which precludes Deep Fusion from working at all. And I'm curious what you guys think about that. Like, part of me thinks, well, I really want to tell the phone what to do. I want to tell the phone what lens to use, if I'm in night mode, how long I want to shoot for. But on the other hand, it's like, okay, well, there's a lot of really smart people working on this, and the phone can calculate things way faster than I can, and it's going to be better at it. So why not just trust the technology in it, and I hit the button, and it does the best thing that it comes up with for the best possible photo? Do you guys have any like tension or feelings around sort of those different ideas?
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. To me, Deep Fusion specifically, I consider in the same category of image manipulation. Is
there
that
you
right?
go. Yep.
The stuff that Apple's doing to turn the raw image into a JPEG. Like, they're already making adjustments and having opinions about saturation and color and all those things. And so I put it in the same category as those adjustments where, and sharpening and all the things they do to process the image, I kind of lump it in with that stuff where I just want them to do the best they can with processing an image, with the data they're getting in from to the sensor. But on the other hand, there are definitely other settings like the duration of a shutter speed or things like that where it's like, yeah, it would be nice to have some control, or at least maybe do it automated when you just push the button and it takes the best picture it can, but you have options to kind of dig in and do it. So I kind of see it both ways. But for me, Deep Fusion, I'm totally fine if it's just completely invisible and just like doing its processing and spitting out a nice image.
Yeah, I feel Apple's got to walk this line where for the bulk of their user base, you really just need to be able to point your camera, the lens of your phone camera at something and press the button. That's what you need to do. And then it needs to do all the analysis, all the capturing, everything it needs to do the right thing to get you what it says is the best picture. I do feel like eventually we're going to be in a world where there are going to be like presets of camera types that you're going to be able to choose from, or after the fact, a little bit like with the portrait mode, you can just go back to that picture and say, that's not the kind of picture I wanted to take, and have it not just apply an effect, but like literally reprocess the data in a different way. Like one of the things about the HEIF format that they're shooting in now is it's a package format. You can stuff, if you wanted to, like all the sensor data in there, like a raw file, all including like the depth sensor and all of that. And you could process it in different ways, different styles. And most people will never do that. But like, I do think we're probably going to get there where Apple's going to say, okay, you press the button and a great picture comes out using tech that we'll tell you about, but you don't need to worry about. And then like, either in a third party app or in a special mode, you can, you know, you'll be able to access all of that stuff and make some different decisions artistically. I, you know, we're not entirely there yet, although you can do some of that now, but I think that's where we're going, where it's never going to be much more complex to shoot the picture because Apple just wants you to press the button and get that, capture that moment. But I do think we're going to, you know, have more maybe power after the fact to say, can you show me some options? Even like bring up like a four up of different approaches to what I just captured and say like, I like that one. That I think is going to happen where eventually you'll be able to kind of like art direct your camera, but it's going to be a little while.
I mean, you could even see a future where they have all that data and then years after you take a photo, the Photos app tells you, oh, hey, do you want to apply these new things to this old data that we have?
I mean, they do that now, right? There's already a, in the For You tab on iOS, there's already a suggested effects that you can apply to this image, right? So that is going to get more sophisticated. You're absolutely right. And it just depends on how much data they hold on to, because you're probably not going to want all the raw sensor data of an image for thousands of images for years, although maybe you will. I mean, iCloud storage space is going to need to be bigger for that. But yeah, they're already going down that path of analyzing your pictures later and saying, you know, I could apply an effect to this that I think would be good, and floating it up to you. And that's only going to continue.
Anything else about the phones jump out to y'all? I mean, I had the XS, so I'm on the yearly cycle most years. But, you know, skipping a generation is more like what most people do. Is there anything that really stands out in that cycle for y'all?
This is minor, but the feel of it in the hand when it doesn't have a case on it. I had my iPhone 10 caseless for most of the time I had it. And then I scuffed the corner a little and it felt weird in my hand. So I had to throw a case on it. Mm-hmm. But for this new one, there was something about it that just made it feel really delicate, which obviously it's like made out of glass, but they all have been, and I didn't feel that way about my 10, and I don't know if it was like the matte surface, and I really felt it whenever I was like setting it down on a countertop. It just felt so delicate. I don't know what other word to use, that I ended up throwing a case on it just so it just changed the feel of me picking it up and putting it down. And then I also think the matte glass on the back, for me at least, felt a little less grippy than the kind of polished glass of the iPhone 10. So
agreed.
I ended up just putting a case on.
Yeah, I agree. I'm all in on the case ever since the iPhone 7, 8, no, the 8, because the 7 was actually kind of grippy, and it's fine. It's what I consider my iPhone to be now, is a leather cased phone. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with it. And the only other thing that I think I've really noticed in the new hardware that that I appreciate is, well, it's actually a software feature, isn't it? It's the NFC stuff where you can scan in like NFC tags and run off shortcuts and all of that. I've been trying stuff out with that, and that's pretty great. So, you know, there's little bits here and there, but it's the camera, right? Like, it's the camera. That's the big thing. It's the new cameras.
Oh, I have another tiny nitpick, is the lack of 3D touch has bit me in only really one spot, but it's a big spot, is the way I use Safari was 3D touching and then sliding up to new tab. And it brings up a new tab and like the cursor's already in the bar and the keyboard's already up, and it was so nice. So I'm still doing that now, but it's just like a second and a half slower than it was before. So it's kind of a shame that this like one interaction that I do many times a day is just like slightly slower now. So that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, haptic touch definitely requires a bit of a beat for the phone to realize what your intention is. And I think overall it's a better trade-off. I think it's a trade-off I'm willing to accept, because the force touch deep press business, I think, was confusing to people, and like it wasn't really something that you could easily discover. Like pressing harder on something that's glass kind of doesn't actually make sense when you say it out loud. But like you said, now you're sort of waiting for a heartbeat for this thing to realize that, oh, they're still touching. Okay, we're going to do this thing now. And I've gotten used to it almost everywhere except the lock screen, launching the camera still feels too slow to me. I wish that on the lock screen it was faster than in the rest of the OS, but oh well.
Sort of surprising myself, what I found is that having 3D touch gone actually makes me use the haptic touch more. And I think this is probably why Apple did it, because now I know there's one gesture that I can do on this thing to get a hidden secret bonus control click, right? And that is I put my finger down and I wait, and then something happens. And before, honestly, I didn't do that because I had this like, what do I do? Do I 3D touch? Do I touch and hold? I don't know. I'm just not going to bother. And I would just not try things because I didn't know which gesture to use. And I know that seems dumb, but it was like, this is too many choices for me. I don't know what to do here. And now I know what to do. There's only the one thing, put your finger down and wait. And so I'm actually using that more, strangely enough, than I did before with a device that did 3D touch. But I agree about the lock screen, that there's got to be a better way to get interact with the lock screen.
And it's nice that the iPhone and iPad now work the same, right? Like, it was so jarring to go to an iPad and not have those features there, and now that they're a little closer, I think that's a huge win. I think that about does it. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
If you want to find links to these guys' shows and Studio Neat, The Glyph, Jason's iPhone Review, that's all over on the web, relay.fm/fusionmembers/27. This is a show for Relay FM members. If you're not a Relay FM member and you listen to this, like, that's fine, but you should go support a show because you want to do things the right way. And I would strongly recommend backing, supporting either Upgrade or Thoroughly Considered. These guys have excellent shows. I don't miss an episode of either one. Until next month, adios.